So I'm just going to take half an hour to introduce this question of British television history, which I will come back to later. British television history since 1945. Now, television is tremendously important. One of the biggest phenomena of popular culture in the last 10 years has been in the last 20 years has been the television series. The television series was not so important 30 years ago, partly because you could only watch it at the right time, you know. On Wednesdays at 7:30, you can watch it. If you've missed it, you've missed it. Whereas, of course, today you can stay in bed all day and watch an entire series, which is something which older generations didn't know of. The very first high-definition television series was inaugurated in London by the BBC in 1936. But it took a long time before ordinary people had any television, yes. And it opened up a lot of questions about what kind of entertainment, what kind of artistic production should be given to the people. Only really after 1945 did people begin to buy televisions. Very slowly, for a long time, there was one person in each street with a television. And if there was a big event, everybody would go to the one person's house to look at the television. And the television was a monopoly of the BBC. The television and the radio. In 1945, only the BBC could produce television and only the BBC could produce radio. Now, this opens up a whole series of questions about government policy, because there's something rather strange happens with television and radio, in that, in general, most people consider that it would not be a good thing if your government produced a newspaper every day, a government newspaper. That sounds like a dictator, Pravda, etc. But in every country, we have public television, publicly owned television. So there's something specific about television. So the BBC was established as a monopoly to produce television, and the government had a very clear idea of what kind of television and radio they wanted to give people. It was considered to be, they wanted it to be educational. They wanted it to be elevating. They wanted it to be cultural. So these are political decisions. I think it's fair to say that for a long time, the BBC was elitist. For example, in the Second World War, very interesting, the radio, the BBC did not like to play popular music. They played mostly classical music and talk shows and theatre. And then, you know, for 2 hours a week, they would have popular music. They didn't really like it, yeah. During the war, this changed completely for a very simple reason. The British soldiers in Egypt, in Palestine, in France, they didn't listen to the BBC. It was too boring. They listened to German radio stations because they had popular music all day long. The government contacted the BBC, and the BBC changed within a week. Because, as you can imagine, during the war, having the British soldiers listening to German radio stations was dangerous. And so the BBC suddenly found that they liked popular music, and that transformed it. But after the war for the television, it remained having a very clear idea of what they should have. At the beginning, remember, they had to invent television programs. At the beginning, they didn't know how to do a television series. All these things have to be invented. The TV series, the soap opera, reality television, the quiz show. All of these things, you need to invent them. They're not automatic. And at the beginning, the BBC saw television as an extension of sound broadcasting. It was like radio with pictures. Because they knew radio. And so it was just like radio with pictures. So many of the early programs are very visually. Of course, it's all in black and white. The very first television broadcast was on the 7th of June, 1946. And up to the early 1950s, you had 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the afternoon, and 3 or 4 hours in the evening. Gradually this will change. Breakfast television was invented in the 1990s, quite late. And this was because for a long time there was this idea that the government should decide what is good for you. So it's not good for the nation for everybody to watch television every morning, so we won't have any. Yeah? It was very this kind of idea. Of course, this becomes impossible with cable and the internet, which is 24 hours. But for a long time there was this idea of deciding what is good for people. And the slogan of the BBC was something for everyone and everything for someone. The BBC had televised a certain number of landmarks, and these landmarks are important because these are the things that made people go out, hey, why don't we buy a television? Remember, televisions were very expensive at the time. When I was young, we rented a television. Most people rented a television. There were two reasons for this. First of all, it was cheaper, but secondly, televisions often broke. You needed the repairman came in every few months, which is not the case today. Today, if you buy a television, it works. And if it stops working, you need to throw it away. You can't repair it. But the old televisions, you have the repairman coming in and repairing it. Yeah. We used to rent a television only in the winter, because in the summer, my parents thought you should play outside. It was very boring. But, you know, what can you do? The victory parade was televised. This is a parade a couple of years after the war to celebrate the victory in the war. In 1946, you had the first full-length television drama, The Silence of the Sea. And in 1948, the London Olympic Games. Yeah, London has had the Olympic Games several times. And finally, 1953, the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. It's the same one. She's still around. The same hats. An estimated 20 million viewers. This at the time was a record. At the time was a world record. These are the events which made people go out and buy televisions. Now, as the years went by, the government was very worried. They were always very interested in what is the best thing you can do with television. How can government policy on television be useful? Government has policy on all forms of culture. How much money should the government give to the National Opera? Opera is very expensive. All national operas receive a lot of money from the government. There's no other way. But it's a political question. How much money should we give to the opera? How much money should the government give to the television producers, and how much control should the government ask for? Yeah. What kind of rules should they put down? And regularly, there were what the government does if they want to think again about the laws concerning broadcast is they ask a group of experts to write a report. And these are the three important reports of the history of British broadcast: the Beveridge Report in 1951. The Pilkington Report in 1962, and the Annan Report in 1977. So this is every 10 years, really, isn't it? It's reasonable. Every 10 years you have a report. And the general trend has been more and more variety, more and more commercialism. That's the general trend. And less moralism. The idea that the BBC should be raising the intellectual level of the people, it became less important. It became much more a discourse of a sort. Well, people can choose what they want to see on the television. We will look at some of these in a moment. So here's the first of these reports, the Beveridge Report from 1951. Bien sûr, je mettrai le PowerPoint sur le blog aussi, donc si vous n'avez pas tout. Mais bon, c'est pas mal de prendre des notes parce que ça fait entrer dans la tête aussi. The Beveridge Report criticized the BBC monopoly and paternalism. Paternalism is the idea is that we know what is good for you. Yeah, so the BBC would not generally ask the audience what they thought of a programme. Say, no, we give you good programmes, and if you don't like them, it's because you don't understand enough. Nevertheless, the Beveridge Report said the monopoly should continue. Secondly, the report said we do not want advertising on the BBC. This is an interesting case because even today there is no advertising on the BBC. Public television in France, there's been ups and downs, changes, regular changes, but in the BBC there is no advertising even today, which can be kind of London. The report also criticised the BBC for writing too much about London and not enough about the rest of the country. So that was the results of the Beveridge report. However, a minority on the committee said that the monopoly should be broken, that new private television should be established. In 1951, perhaps you remember, the new government was conservative, and quite naturally you would expect a conservative government to be more in favour of private television, more in favour of commercialisation. That's what one of the things which is important about being a conservative. And the new conservative administration was not very happy with the report, but nevertheless they renewed the BBC charter. This continuation of the BBC monopoly led to a reaction. A new organisation was established by people who were not too happy with the monopoly of the BBC. And they called themselves the Popular Television Association. And this organisation was founded by theatre managers and newspapers and involved people who worked in the entertainment industry. And they called for the people's right to be entertained rather than educated. Yeah, they said, oh, listen, when people come home from work and they switch on the television, they don't want the BBC to educate them. They just want to have a bit of fun, relax. Yeah, so this will become a permanent argument in television between work which could educate as well as entertain, and work which is purely entertainment, if that exists. Even today, you hear a lot of criticism about reality television, for example. It's very common to hear people criticising reality television. It's just wasting time. It's making people stupid, etc. It's kind of all arguments. The important thing is to understand where the debate comes from. Entertained rather than educated. I was going to say something else about that, which was very important, but I can't remember what it was now. Can't remember. So calling for people's right to be entertained rather than educated. And of course, these people who worked in the theatre, or they were writing, they really wanted more television channels. Because yeah, if you write programmes, you would like there to be several television channels to sell them to. So there's a commercial interest in here. And so this was the organisation which wanted a change and wanted an end to the BBC monopoly. The debates got quite fierce because on the one hand then you've got these people saying, hey, we want more entertainment, the people have the right to be entertained. And on the other side you had people saying, no, the BBC monopoly is good for the culture of the country. Oh yes, I remember what I was going to say. Il y a quelques années, je travaillais pour des apprentis journalistes, je leur donnais des cours d'anglais, et on travaillait beaucoup sur qu'est-ce que c'est la télévision. Et quand ils écrivaient des rédacs ou dans le DST, à le lire, on dirait qu'ils regardaient tous Arte et rien d'autre. Et je me suis dit, mais c'est pas possible, qui regarde TF1 Et parce qu'ils avaient l'impression que ça faisait bien de dire, oh oui, je regarde souvent Arte. Arte, ça va quand on n'est pas fatigué, mais si on est fatigué, c'est beaucoup. Hein? Okay, so different groups of people defended the BBC. Educators, men of the church, moralists, and ideological politicians defended the BBC monopoly. Notice men of the church. In the 1950s, the church was still very influential, not the case today. But in the 1950s, or what the Church of England said, this was important. The other people who were opposed to having more television stations were the newspapers. The newspapers make their money from advertising. And they imagined that if there was advertising on television, there would not be so much money for advertising in newspapers. What did these people say who were defending the BBC monopoly? They said that as a monopoly, you can have a structured, reasoned, coherent set of programs for everybody, and that the market cannot solve this problem. And one of the defenders of the BBC, used very strong language. He said, if we allow commercial television, that would be like importing into the country smallpox and bubonic plague. Donc il comparait l'arrivée de la télévision commerciale à la peste, qui a quand même tué un quart de la population de l'Europe à l'époque. Alors bon, c'était assez fort comme idée. Just as a little break, here was a 1968 talent contest, a short extract. You know, today talent contests have become very popular, The Voice, and Britain's Got Talent, or La France, une incroyable talent. But the form of them has changed a lot. Today you have all very complicated forms, where you have the public voting. Of course, the public voting was not possible in the 50s, because people didn't have telephones. This is a 1968 extract from a talent show called Opportunity Knocks. So imagine, it's The Voice, but 1968.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Opportunity Knocks All Winners Show.
So you see that the person who is introducing is actually the conductor of the band. Now this is very 1960s, because in the 1960s still the band leader was a very important person, more important than the singer. This is the c'est le nagui de l'époque.
And here's your host, Yuri Green.
Ah, c'est un argument. Et vous, je le vois très bien ici, c'est très intéressant, je vous le décris. Alors là, ça c'est pas bien. Alors, il doit y avoir un truc sur lequel je dois appuyer.